Okay, we're now at the second half of Old Testament study number 16, The Crumbling South. And we made it through page 5 in the earlier recording, and we're going to finish this study up at this time. But let's do a little recap. We won't go into detail because that obviously takes too long. But let's even go all the way back to the Crumbling North, the lesson that we studied before this one. And we won't go through all of page 1. We did that on the prior recording, but let's at least remind ourselves of all the concepts, the picture concepts in the picture for the Crumbling North. So if you can turn to your Old Testament Study 15 picture, and what we first see is of all these kings of the northern nation of Israel, we see three different colors involved. We see the top section is a dark, dreary gray color. Then we have a golden section, then we have a orange and red section down at the bottom. And the top dark section, that was the age of civil strife. So during the kingship of the kings that we have up there, we have the age of civil strife, and that is civil strife between the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. The nation split, and so we had basically 100 years where they kept fighting and continual warfare during that time until that changed under Ahab and Jehoshaphat. And then we have this period, this golden area is the golden era, the age of wealth and prosperity. And that was about 100 years. And then after that, the orange and red, we have a period of rapid decline. And we've talked about how things just went downhill very quickly for the northern nation. Now there's a few elements on some of these kings, so let's look at some of those. The very first one is for Jeroboam. You've got that golden calf. And that reminds us of the big problem that Jeroboam brought in that really resulted in the downfall of the whole nation. He set up his own religion. Rather than having his people go to Jerusalem and at risk of them allying themselves with Rehoboam and the southern nation of Judah, he made up his own religion with his own festivals and priests and all of that. Set up these golden calves in Dan and Bethel, two different places where they could go to worship these calves. And the problem is, well, that was a big problem, but the bigger problem is that all the kings that followed him continued in that religion, continued in the sins of Jeroboam. Not a one of them turned back to Yahweh. Some of them went even worse. And we've seen that. We actually see that happening as we go down the one of the last ones in the period of civil strife is Omri. And here on his, you see a volcano. And that volcano reminds us that actually from the time of Baasha down to Omri, that Israel had a lot of trouble with Syria. Syria was the neighbor to the north. Now during this time, they also had trouble with Judah, which was their neighbor to the south. But Syria was a big threat to them. And in fact, they became a vassal. They became subject to. They had to pay tribute to Syria at times. And that's what we see with the coins at the base of that volcano. And Omri was one. It says that under Omri, he found it trivial to continue in the sins of Jeroboam. And he made things a whole lot worse. And then it got even worse than that with his son. His son Ahab married Jezebel, the daughter of the king of Sidon, and brought Baal worship into Israel. And that's what we see with the snake on the square of Ahab there. This was the bottom of the barrel. This was the worst time in terms of faithfulness or faithlessness for the nation of Israel. And God sent his heavy hitter. He sent Elijah at that time to come and call his people back to him, to remind them of the destiny as his chosen people, to be blessed, to be a blessing. And then after Elijah finished his time, then he was followed by Elisha. So we've got the two banners there of Elijah and Elisha. We see that those banners are both black and white, and that reminds us that the prophets brought two different messages, or two messages that kind of went together, gloom and doom and hope, okay? The warnings of judgment against the sin, but also the promise of God's salvation, the promise of God's grace. And we'll actually talk about that next time. That'll be the subject of our next week's class, is that aspect of the message of the prophet. Okay, next, we then going on further, you see then towards the end of the golden age, the age of wealth and prosperity, at the time of Jeroboam, we've got a couple more prophets, Hosea and Amos. You see the black and white with them as well to remind us of that common theme of gloom as well as hope. During this time of wealth and prosperity, people who did have a little faith in God got even more lax. And that's what the prophets of Amos and Hosea came for, is to warn people against spiritual laxity during a time of wealth and prosperity. It's a message that we need to hear ourselves today, because we are in a time of wealth and prosperity, and people don't see a need for God, right? And that's the problem they had then. But then we start getting into the orange section. We see on Menahem, we see this volcano, but now it's not just a volcano like we had at Omri, but it's erupting. And this is telling us this is a major, major threat. This is a violent threat from a violent group of people called the Assyrians. And Israel became subject to them. You see the coins at the base there during Menahem. And Assyria became a violent threat to Israel's freedom during the reign of Menahem. Going further, we see then under Pekah, the manuscript peg, he tried to get out of it. He tried to get away from Assyria, and in doing so, allied himself with Syria. Okay, Syria was in between Assyria and Israel, and allied himself with Syria, and that backfired on him. And that was a big problem. We also see on Pekah, we see the Isaiah banner. And Isaiah came largely to the southern nation of Judah to warn them not to get caught up in the sinful practices of the northern nation of Israel and say, look at what God's doing to them. Look at what God's allowing to happen to our brothers at the north. Don't let that happen to us. Okay. But Isaiah also at that time prophesied that the northern nation of Israel would be totally destroyed. And that's what then happens under Hosea. You see, Hosea has a manuscript peg. He tried to ally himself with Egypt against Assyria. That backfired, and the dark red color of the Hosea segment reminds us that full-scale destruction came to the north during Hosea's reign. We also see the overall portrayal of the crumbling kingdom. Reminds us that Assyria destroyed the northern kingdom in 722 B.C. Okay? So those are the concepts of the northern kings. So now let's look and give ourselves a little bit of a recap on the crumbling south. Page 2, we went into some comparisons between the differences between Judah and Israel on their geography, their dynasties, their faithfulness to God, the eras. We won't go over that again, but you do see some significant differences in there. But you see some commonalities and you see some common themes. They were all called to be faithful. They all had their troubles at times. And then there were periods of civil strife, Baalism, Golden Age, decline, reform, and destruction that we see in the south, which are very similar to the ones that we saw in the north. Now we go through, we see that it all started out with Rehoboam, Solomon's son. And you may want to take a look at the chart on page 10 as we go through some of this recap. We see that Rehoboam, his mom was an Ammonite. And just as his dad Solomon had trouble towards the end of his life with remaining faithful to God because he started worshiping other gods, Rehoboam did the same. But he didn't wait till he was older. He followed his father's footsteps and worshiped other gods. His mom was from Ammon, and so she brought other gods there as well. So there was a time of faithlessness. There was faithfulness during the first 3 years of his reign, not because of him, but because of the atrocities that Jeroboam brought by making up his own religion. The faithful people in the north of Israel left, and they came down to Judah, and that strengthened Judah, that strengthened Rehoboam, until Rehoboam decided that he was strong enough to do whatever he wanted to do, and after 3 years, he abandoned the law of God and did his own thing. And as a result, there were there was trouble. God allowed Shishak of Egypt to come in and attack Jerusalem. And what we do see during that time is that Rehoboam humbled himself and humbled himself before God, repented, and then as a result, God decided, okay, I'm not going to destroy you. I'm not going to destroy Jerusalem. I'm not going to destroy Judah, but I will let you be subject to Egypt so that you will know the difference between serving me and serving others. And so there we see the volcano on the Rehoboam segment to remind us that Egypt became a political threat to the south during the time of Rehoboam. Then we have Rehoboam's son Abijah, and we saw that he was evil just like his father. So we have a couple of bad mostlies on our chart on page 10. And there was continual warfare between the north and the south during his lifetime. And, well, we had a couple stories about him there. Then his son Asa took over. Now, Asa was good. Asa was different. Asa went around and he removed the altars to all these other gods. He removed the high places, the Asherah poles, the sacred stones that people had set up. He even removed his grandmother because she put up an Asherah pole. And he deposed her from being the queen grandmother. Okay, and as a result, God blessed him. God blessed him, gave him victories, gave him peace for his first 35 until 35th year. But then, when there was a little threat to the north with Baasha closing the border, rather than turning to God, he turned to help from Assyria, or from Syria. And as a result of not looking to God, of not trusting God, God said, look, didn't I take care of you in the past when the Cushites came and attacked? Why did you turn to Syria instead of to me? And now since you didn't turn to me, since you turned to Syria, you're going to have, for the rest of your reign, for the rest of your life, continual warfare. And we see that he even continued with that. When he got a serious painful foot disease, rather than turning to God, he turned to doctors. And that continued to show that God was not number one in his life there again. Asa then was followed by his son Jehoshaphat. Okay, Asa was there for 41 years, quite a long time, then Jehoshaphat for 25. And Asa and Jehoshaphat, in his early years, he walked in the ways of his father David. And he took the reforms that his father Asa had done and continued those. In fact, he went around and told, had people go around Judah teaching all the people God's law. He also appointed judges and commanded them to be faithful to God, to make godly decisions. And as a result, God blessed Jehoshaphat for his faithfulness. He gave him peace. He gave him great wealth. He gave him great power. Everything was great, except, okay, in seeking peace and seeking things, he was a nice guy and he was nice to the wrong people. He allied himself with the north, with Israel. The king at the time was Ahab, the worst king of Israel, the worst time that Judah could ever ally themselves with Israel was during Ahab, and that's what Jehoshaphat did. And he went to battle with Ahab, joined forces with Ahab in battle against the Syrians. He did the same thing with Ahab's son Joram against the the Moabites in the desert of Eden, Edom. But the biggest thing he did that really brought the peace but also created other problems was he married his son Jehoram to Ahab's daughter Athaliah. And that made a union between the north and the south that resulted in the problems of the north finding their way south and creating problems for the southern nation of Judah. We see on the Jehoshaphat segment the flag, peace flag there. And so that tells us that this time of civil strife ended during Jehoshaphat. And it ended because of the wedding ring that we see at the base there, because Jehoshaphat married his son to Ahab's daughter. That wedding ring has a smudge on it because with that marriage came a marriage between the north and the south at the worst time possible. And that resulted in the problems of the north, i.e. Baalism, Baal worship, coming down to the south. And we see that on the next three kings with Jehoram, Ahaziah, and Athaliah. The snake on there tells us that we had this period of Baalism there in the south, just like we had had at the north. God wasn't real pleased about it. We saw in 2 Chronicles 19:2 that God condemned Jehoshaphat and said, what are you doing teaming up with someone who hates me? Should you help the wicked and love those who hate God? Okay, as a result, you're going to have troubles. And he had a number of troubles. But throughout all this, even though he had poor discernment on who he teamed up with, he had good discernment in his relationship with God. He remained faithful. When he was threatened, he turned to God. And so he was considered a good king. He just had this discernment problem and teamed up with some people he shouldn't have teamed up with. It's kind of like, you know, as parents, you don't want your kids to team up with the wrong friends. You want them to have friends that are going to be positive influences to them, not negative influences. Well, he had some definite negative influences, and that resulted in big problems, not only for him, but for the whole nation. So that when he died, his son Jehoram took over, and Jehoram had married Ahab's daughter Athaliah, and she brought that Baalism, that Baal worship, to Judah. And how is Jehoram considered as a king? Look at your page 10. Bad. Because of bringing in Baal worship. Okay, he built high places. It says in chapter 21 of 2 Chronicles that he walked in the ways of Israel since he had married Ahab's daughter. We even see him, his wickedness from the very beginning, that when he did become king, one of the early things he did is killed all of his brothers so that there would be no threats to his kingship. As a result, we see in the rest of chapter 21 that God punished him. He had Edom and Libna rebel. He allowed the Philistines and Arabs to attack and take all of his treasures from the palace and the temple and take his sons and wives away from him and kill them. Then we also see that he died, as predicted by Elijah, from a very painful bowel disease. Okay, so Jehoram was only around 8 years, but he sure created a lot of problems for a number of years for the southern nation of Judah. Now, when he died, his son Ahaziah took over. He was the son of Jehoram and Athaliah, so like mother, like son. He also was unfaithful. He walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, and when he needed advice, rather than looking to his grandfather Jehoshaphat's advisors and the advisors in the south, he looked to his grandfather Ahab's advisors. He looked to the north for advice and continued walking in the ways of the horrible Baalism ways of the north. Now, we saw, though, that he was only around for a year, and that's because around this time, God raised up Jehu, the army commander up in Israel, and said that he called Jehu to be the next king and commanded him to go and purge Omri's household. In other words, wipe it out. Get rid of everybody who's a descendant of Omri. And that included Ahaziah. Okay, Ahaziah was Ahab's grandson, Omri's great-grandson. So he was killed by Jehu in the purge of Ahab's family while he was visiting his uncle Joram. Okay, so when he died, well, he had pretty well wiped everybody out, right? So his mother took over. Okay, his mother Athaliah took over. So now we now have someone who's on the throne who is not a descendant of David, and she's the worst one who could be on the throne. She is the descendant, she is the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. So she naturally continues the horrible time of Baalism and Baal worship. She reigns for 6 years, and what was her top priority when she took rule? Was to finish wiping out the whole Davidic line, not just her family, which included her family, but anyone who is a descendant of David. She tried to wipe them out so that there would be nobody else who could claim the throne. And that's where we left off last week, kind of at this thing of, okay, well, but God promised to David that he would always have a descendant on the throne. But here we had Jehoram, who killed his brothers to protect the throne, and now his wife, Athaliah, is doing everything she can to eliminate anyone who could have possible claim to the Davidic throne. So what happened? How could there be any more kings if she did that? Well, let's pick that up. 2 Chronicles chapter 22, and we'll start at verse 11. Actually, let's start at verse 10, just to kind of catch us back up to where we were. Okay. When Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she proceeded to destroy the whole royal family of the house of Judah. Okay, so there you see her doing that. Then verse 11, but Jehosheba, the daughter of King Jehoram, okay, Athaliah's husband was Jehoram, so she, Jehosheba, was a daughter of Jehoram, apparently not the daughter of Athaliah, so maybe a different wife. But she took Joash, who was a son of Ahaziah, and stole him away from among the royal princes who were about to be murdered, and put him and his nurse in a bedroom. So there was a baby. Ahaziah had a baby here, and Aunt Jehosheba took that baby and hid it, okay? Hid this baby named Joash so that Athaliah wouldn't kill him. It says, Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, and the wife of the priest Jehoiada, she was Ahaziah's sister. She hid the child from Athaliah, so she could not kill him. She remained hidden with them at the temple of God for 6 years while Athaliah ruled the land. So there was one that Athaliah didn't get. She missed one. Now that one was just a baby, but babies grow up. And for 6 years she ruled. And during that 6 years, that baby was taken care of by Jehosheba and her husband Jehoiada, who happened to be the high priest, okay, of Judah. So they hid him in the temple so she couldn't get to him and didn't know about him. So what happened then? Chapter 23. In the 7th year, Jehoiada, this is the high priest, showed his strength. Verse 3. We'll skip a bunch of names, okay? He gathered together the Levites and the heads of the Israelite families from all the towns in verse 2. When they came to Jerusalem, the whole assembly made a covenant with the king at the temple of God. Jehoiada said to them, "The king's son shall reign, just as the Lord promised concerning the descendants of David." Okay, so Jehoiada here, the priest, is sticking his head out and saying, okay, now it's time for us to make a descendant of David the king again. That just as God promised that David would always have a descendant on the throne. And the only descendant that we've got here is Joash, and he's the rightful king. So he gathered these people, these Levites and leaders, said, now it's time to put things back in place. So this kid was only 7 years old, right? Then verse 11, Jehoiada and his sons brought out the king's son, okay, this is Joash, and put the crown on him. They presented him with a copy of the covenant and proclaimed him king. They anointed him and shouted, "Long live the king." When Athaliah heard the noise of the people running and cheering the king, she went to them at the temple of the Lord. She looked, and there was the king standing by his pillar at the entrance. The officers and the trumpeters were beside the king, and all the people of the land were rejoicing and blowing trumpets and singing. Singers with musical instruments were leading the praises. Then Athaliah tore her robes and shouted, "Treason! Treason!" In verse 15, they seized her as she reached the entrance of the horse gate on the palace grounds, and there they put her to death. So Jehoiada stuck it out and put out Joash and said, he's the rightful king. We proclaim him king. And he staged this coup, and it worked. And Athaliah was killed, and now Joash, a 7-year-old boy, was king. Now, how can a 7-year-old boy reign? Well, he can't. But his surrogate dad could, who happened to be the high priest. So Jehoiada kind of reigned in his stead as he grew up. So how did Jehoiada change things under Joash? Going on, verse 16. Jehoiada then made a covenant that he and the people and the king would be Yahweh's people. All the people went to the temple of Baal and tore it down. They smashed the altars and idols and killed Matan, the priest of Baal, in front of the altars. And then verse 21. All the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was quiet because Athaliah had been slain with the sword. So he committed himself, he committed the people to be God's people. We're going to be God's people again. We've had this time of Baal worship, but now we're going to be God's faithful people again. And so they went and they got rid of all the Baal worship, got rid of the Baal temple and idols and altars and all of that. Okay, so that's how Jehoiada started things out. How faithful then was Joash's reign? 24 verse 2. Joash did what was right in the eyes of Yahweh all the years of Jehoiada the priest. So he started out faithful as long as Jehoiada was there. But what does this tell you then? That when Jehoiada died, then something might have changed. While Jehoiada was around, chapter 24 and verse 8, at the king's command, a chest was made and placed outside at the gate of the temple of Yahweh. All the officials and all the people brought their contributions gladly, dropping them into the chest until it was full. In verse 12, the king and Jehoiada gave it to the men who carried out the work required for the temple of the Lord. They hired masons and carpenters to restore the Lord's temple, and also workers in iron and bronze to repair the temple. So they set up this collection and let people donate to help repair the temple. The temple was in disrepair, had been abused and all that during the time of the Baal kings. And so they purified it, they cleansed it, they repaired it, they fixed it with the contributions that the people brought. So the people got to participate in that as well. Well, then eventually Jehoiada died. And how faithful did Joash remain then? Verse 17, after the death of Jehoiada, the officials of Judah came and paid homage to the king, and he listened to them. They abandoned the temple of Yahweh, the God of their fathers, and worshipped Asherah poles and idols. Because of their guilt, God's anger came upon Judah and Jerusalem. Although Yahweh sent prophets to the people to bring them back to him, and though they testified against them, they wouldn't listen. So here you see, now that Jehoiada's gone, Joash rejects God, and the officials reject God. Then the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, a son of Jehoiada the priest. He stood before the people and said, "This is what God says. Why do you disobey Yahweh's commands? You will not prosper. Because you've forsaken Yahweh, he has forsaken you." But they plotted against him, and by order of the king, King Joash, they stoned him to death in the courtyard of Yahweh's temple. King Joash did not remember the kindness that Zechariah's father Jehoiada had shown him by saving his life, by raising him since he was an infant, okay, by putting him in place as the king. He forgot all of that and instead killed Jehoiada's son Zechariah, who said as he lay dying, "May Yahweh see this and call you to account." So here you see Joash started great, but then once Jehoiada, who led him into faithfulness, was gone, he turned. He turned from God and in a horrible way. How was Joash punished for his faithlessness? Verse 23. At the turn of the year, the army of Aram marched against Joash. It invaded Judah and Jerusalem and killed all the leaders of the people. They sent all the plunder to their king in Damascus. Although the Aramean army had come with only a few men, Yahweh delivered into their hands a much larger army. Because Judah had forsaken Yahweh, the God of their fathers, judgment was executed on Joash. When the Arameans withdrew, they left Joash severely wounded. His officials then conspired against him for murdering the son of Jehoiada the priest, and they killed him in his bed. So he died and was buried in the city of David, but not in the tombs of the kings. Joash was defeated because of his rejection of God, because of his faithlessness. He was defeated by the Syrians. God allowed the Syrians to defeat him, and he was assassinated by his officials. Okay. So what a great start that went bad. Okay? So that's why we see good mostly is the term here that kind of describes him on page 10. Right, next, Amaziah. Who was Amaziah and how faithful was his reign? Turn back to 2 Kings chapter 14. We're going to bounce a little bit between the Kings and the Chronicles just based on, you know, where I felt we had the best description. In the second year of Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel, Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 29 years. His mother's name was Jehoadine. She was from Jerusalem. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, but not as his father David had done. In everything, he followed the example of his father Joash. Some of the faithful aspects of Joash when Jehoiada was around. The high places, however, were not removed. The people continued to offer sacrifices and burn incense there. So you see, Amaziah was Joash's son, and he did right in God's eyes, like the early Joash, but not quite as good as David. He allowed the high places, which were places where people would go to worship other gods on hilltops, he allowed those to remain. And that's why he's kind of listed as good mostly, not totally good. We also have a story in 2 Chronicles 25, verses 3 to 4, says, after the kingdom was firmly in his control, he executed the officials who had murdered his father, the king. Yet he did not put their sons to death, as would be done in a lot of nations, but acted in accordance with what is written in the law in the book of Moses, where the Lord commanded that fathers should not be put to death for their children, nor children put to death for their fathers. Each is to die for his own sins. Okay, that's in Deuteronomy 24:16, by the way. Okay, so he executed some officials who had assassinated his dad. Well, how did God reward Amaziah's faithfulness for walking in the ways, at least of Joash, maybe not as much as David, verses 6 to 11? Amaziah hired 100,000 fighting men from Israel for 100 talents of silver. But a man of God came to him and said, O king, these troops from Israel must not march with you because the Lord is not with Israel, not with any of the people of Ephraim. Even if you go and fight courageously in battle, God will overthrow you before the enemy, for God has the power to help or to overthrow. Amaziah asked the man of God, but what about the 100 talents I paid for these Israelite troops? The man of God said, the Lord can give you much more than that. So Amaziah dismissed the troops who had come to him from Ephraim and sent them home. They were furious with Judah and left for home in a great rage. So where he started to trust them, looked to Israel for help. He at least listened to this man of God and sent them back, but then this kind of backfires a little bit. But, which talks about in future verses, verse 11 there, you can see, or verse 13. Verse 11, Amaziah then marshaled his strength and led his army to the Valley of Salt, where he killed 10,000 men of Seir. Okay, so he got a victory over Edom, even without the 100,000 hired Israelites. Okay. Well, what is the other part of the bad mostly, okay, or good mostly? How did he lose his faith and how was he punished? Verse 14, when Amaziah returned from slaughtering the Edomites, he brought back the gods of the people of Seir. He set them up as his own gods, bowed down to them, and burned sacrifices to them. The anger of the Lord burned against Amaziah, and he sent a prophet to him and said, why do you consult this people's gods who could not even save their own people from your hand? And then verse 20, Amaziah, however, would not listen, for God so worked that he might hand them over to Jehoash, because they sought the gods of Edom. So Jehoash, the king of Israel, attacked. He and Amaziah, king of Judah, faced each other at Beth Shemesh. Judah was routed by Israel, and every man fled to his home. So here we see that he kept these gods from Edom after he had been to Edom and had that victory over Edom that we saw in verses 6 to 11. But he kept some of their idols, and he worshiped them. And as a result, God was not with him. And God allowed Israel to attack, to fight, to win, to defeat Judah to defeat Amaziah. And then the final word here in verse 27, from the time that Amaziah had turned away from following Yahweh, they conspired against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish. But they sent men to after him to Lachish, and they killed him there. So he also was assassinated by his officials, okay, by the leaders. So just as, I guess, his, what was it, his grandfather had, no, his father, Joash, had been, okay. All right, next, Uzziah. Okay, Uzziah was also known as Azariah, so I've given you both names. And so if you see Azariah, it's the same name as Uzziah. 2 Chronicles 26, verses 3 to 5. We see that Uzziah was 16 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 52 years. His mother's name was Jechaliah. She was from Jerusalem. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father Amaziah had done. Okay, so you see, he was faithful. But going on, he sought God during the days of Zechariah, who instructed him in the fear of God. As long as he sought Yahweh, God gave him success. So Amaziah's son Uzziah started very young, okay, only 16 years old when he was king. But he did right like his father. He sought God. So how did God reward his faithfulness? Verse 7. God helped him against the Philistines and against the Arabs who lived in Gerbaal and against the Meunites. The Ammonites brought tribute to Uzziah, and his fame spread as far as the border of Egypt because he had become very powerful. Verse 10, he also built towers in the desert and dug many cisterns because he had much livestock in the foothills and in the plain. He had people working his fields and vineyards in the hills and in the fertile lands, for he loved the soil. Then verse 15, in Jerusalem he made machines designed by skillful men for use on the towers and on the corner defenses to shoot arrows and hurl large stones. His fame spread far and wide, for he was greatly helped until he became powerful. Okay, so we see that God rewarded him by giving him victories over Philistines and Arabs, by giving him great wealth, by giving him great power and security, and by making him famous. Okay, so God blessed him greatly. We see on our picture that the segment for Uzziah is golden in color, and that tells us that this was the peak of the golden age, the peak of the time of wealth and prosperity for Judah, was during Uzziah. And he remained faithful to God during that time. We see that Isaiah and Micah popped up at this time. Isaiah and Micah prophesied to Judah during the time of Uzziah on to Hezekiah, and I guess Isaiah even a little bit further than that. Well, there was kind of a little statement there that said his fame spread far and wide, for he was greatly helped until he became powerful. So what does that mean? That means something might have happened. So let's look. Verse 16. After Uzziah became powerful, his pride led to his downfall. Oh, man. He's got everything going for him here. A man after God's heart. Now, he is good, but see what happens here. He was unfaithful to Yahweh his God, and he entered the temple of Yahweh to burn incense on the altar of incense. Azariah the priest, with 80 other courageous priests of Yahweh, followed him in. They confronted him and said, "It's not right for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord. That's for the priests, the descendants of Aaron, who have been consecrated to burn incense. Leave the sanctuary, for you've been unfaithful, and you will not be honored by the Lord God." Uzziah, though, who had a censer in his hand ready to burn incense, became angry. While he was raging at the priests in their presence, "Hey, don't you know who I am? I'm the king. I can do whatever I want," right? While he was raging at the priests in their presence before the incense altar in the Lord's temple, leprosy broke out on his forehead. When Azariah, the chief priest, and all the other priests looked at him, they saw that he had leprosy on his forehead, so they hurried him out. Indeed, he himself was eager to leave because Yahweh had afflicted him. So here you see his pride got the better of him. He thought that he was above the law, above God's law. He thought that he was so great that he could go burn incense. Oh, heck, what's the big deal? I can burn incense. But no, that was something that God had given for the priest to do and not for Uzziah. And as a result, he was punished by God with leprosy. So how did he spend his last years? Verse 21, he had leprosy until the day that he died. He therefore lived in a separate house, leprous and excluded from the temple of the Lord. Jotham, his son, had charge of the palace and governed the people of the land. So he lived out the rest of his life alienated from everyone, away from everyone, because he had leprosy. He couldn't come in contact with people. He's under quarantine. Okay, and so his son Jotham ruled in his stead. We see Jotham in chapter 27 was 25 years old when he then became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 16 years. His mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father Uzziah had done, but unlike him, he did not enter the temple of Yahweh. The people, however, continued their corrupt practices. So we see that Jotham was a good, faithful king. He didn't let the pride get the better of him and follow his father's mistakes like that. Okay? We don't see he was the best. He was good, but the people still were not fully faithful. And so the king could influence that. He influenced it to a degree by him being faithful, but the people still continued their corrupt practices. So how did God bless Jotham because of his faithfulness? Verses 5 and 6. Jotham made war on the king of the Ammonites and conquered them. That year the Ammonites paid him 100 talents of silver, 10,000 cores of wheat, and 10,000 cores of barley. The Ammonites brought him the same amount also in the second and third years. Jotham grew powerful because he walked steadfastly before Yahweh his God. Okay? So God gave him victory over the Ammonites. They became subject to him, and he grew powerful. So God blessed him as a result of his faithfulness. Okay? All right, next, we have Ahaz. Okay, Ahaz. And you kind of see Ahaz over on the left of the picture there. That sounds kind of similar to Ahab, right? Well, just because the names sound alike don't mean that they were both bad, right? Well, it doesn't mean that, but they were. Okay? Ahaz, you see on page 10, was wicked. Wicked. How? What happened? 2 Chronicles 27, starting at verse 9. Jotham rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, and Ahaz, his son, succeeded him as king. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 16 years. Unlike David, his father, he did not do what was right in the eyes of the Lord. He walked in the ways of the kings of Israel and also made cast idols for worshiping the Baals. So here we see that he walked in the ways of Israel. He did not follow Yahweh. He did not worship Yahweh. He did not follow in the faithfulness of his father and his grandfather, but rather he turned away, and you see some of the same sort of elements that we saw in the northern nation. Now, this is during the time Isaiah is there, right? And this is at the same time that the northern nation is falling away, that is being destroyed by Assyria. And Isaiah is working hard on Ahaz to call him back to faithfulness in God. But look at what he does. Verse 3, he burned sacrifices in the valley of Ben-Hinnom and sacrificed even his own sons in the fire, following the detestable ways of the nations that the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. He offered sacrifices and burned incense at the high places on the hilltops and under every spreading tree. He sacrificed his own sons to these other gods. He worshipped Baal at the high places and everywhere under every spreading tree. Everywhere he could find, he worshipped Baal. He rejected Yahweh. 2 Kings chapter 16 gives us a little bit more story here too. Verse 5. Then Rezin, the king of Aram, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem and besieged Ahaz, but they could not overpower him. So verse 7, Ahaz sent messengers to say to Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, I am your servant and vassal. Come up and save me out of the hand of the king of Aram and the king of Israel who are attacking me. And Ahaz took the silver and gold found in the temple of Yahweh and in the treasuries of the royal palace and sent it as a gift to the king of Assyria. The king of Assyria complied by attacking Damascus and capturing it. He deported its inhabitants to Kir and put Rezin to the death. Then King Ahaz went to Damascus to meet Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria. He saw an altar in Damascus and sent Uriah the priest a sketch of the altar with detailed plans for its construction. So he looked, instead of to God for help, he looked to Assyria for help, allied himself with Assyria, made himself subject to Assyria to get help from Assyria, and then he sees this pagan altar in Damascus and copies it. Okay? The guy keeps digging his grave deeper and deeper, right? 2 Chronicles 28, starting at verse 22. In his time of trouble, well, let me kind of back up. Verse 21, Ahaz took some of the things from the temple of the Lord and from the royal palace and from the princes and presented them to the king of Assyria, but that did not help him. In his time of trouble, King Ahaz became even more unfaithful to the Lord. He offered sacrifices to the gods of Damascus who had defeated him. For he thought, well, since the gods of the kings of Aram have helped them, I'll sacrifice to them so that they'll help me. But they were his downfall and the downfall of all of Israel. Ahaz gathered together the furnishings from the temple of God and took them away. He shut the door of the Lord's temple, set up altars at every street corner in Jerusalem. In every town in Jerusalem, he built high places to burn sacrifices to other gods and provoked Yahweh, the God of his fathers, to anger. So he worshiped the gods of Damascus, the gods of Syria. He shut the temple. He nailed shut the temple so that no one could go in and worship Yahweh. He removed the furnishings from it and all that. He set up altars at every street corner so that people would worship these gods of the Syrians and these other gods that he worshiped. So how faithful was he? Page 10, he was wicked. He was wicked. So how did God punish Ahaz's unfaithfulness? Verse 5, therefore Yahweh his God handed him over to the king of Aram. The Arameans defeated him and took many of his people as prisoners and brought them to Damascus. He was also given into the hands of the king of Israel, who inflicted heavy casualties on him. In one day, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, killed 120,000 soldiers in Judah because Judah had forsaken Yahweh, the God of their fathers. And then verse 17, the Edomites had again come and attacked Judah and carried away prisoners, while the Philistines had raided towns in the foothills and in the Negev of Judah. And in verse 20, Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, came to him, but he gave him trouble instead of help. So, as a result of his unfaithfulness, God allowed Ahaz to be destroyed, allowed him to lose battles and be beaten up on all sides, from Syria, from Israel, from Edom, on the Syria on the north, Israel, Syria to the far north, Israel to the north, Edom to the east, Philistia to the west, Assyria to the even farther north. He was beat up on every side. Okay, heavy defeats here. We see on his segment on the picture this manuscript peg, and that reminds us that Ahaz formed an alliance with Assyria to try to ward off threats from Syria and Israel. But that backfired because Assyria didn't really care much. And Assyria, as we saw in verse 20, gave him trouble instead of help. We also then see the coins there, and that tells us that the alliance with Assyria resulted in Judah becoming a vassal to Assyria. So Assyria is now creating a problem for Judah because of Ahaz's faithlessness. He's then followed by his son Hezekiah. Okay? 2 Kings 18, verses 1 through 7. In the third year of Hoshea, son of Elah, the king of Israel, okay, Hoshea was the last one of Israel, right? Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 29 years. His mother's name was Abijah, the daughter of Zechariah. He did what was right in the eyes of Yahweh, just as his father David had done. He removed the high places, smashed the sacred stones, and cut down the Asherah poles. He even broke into pieces the bronze snake that Moses had made, for up to that time the Israelites had been burning incense to it. It was called Nehushtan. Okay. Hezekiah trusted in Yahweh, the God of Israel. There was no one like him among all the kings of Judah, either before him or after him. He held fast to Yahweh and did not cease to follow him. He kept the commands that Yahweh had given Moses, and Yahweh was with him. He was successful in whatever he undertook. He rebelled against the king of Assyria and did not serve him. So now we have the tide is turned. And Hezekiah came, and if you take a look at page 10, it says he was the best. And even says that in what we just read here. There was no one before him, none of the kings before him or after him, trusted in God like he did. And as a result, God blessed him. God took care of him. Okay, what kind of reforms did Hezekiah put into place? 2 Chronicles chapter 29, we'll read a few scattered verses. Verse 3, in the first month of the first year of his reign. So what's that telling us? He didn't waste any time, right? He opened the doors of the temple of the Lord that his father had shut, right? And he repaired them. He brought in the priests and the Levites and assembled them in the square on the east side and said, listen to me, Levites, consecrate yourselves now and consecrate the temple of Yahweh, the God of your fathers. Remove all defilement from the sanctuary. Then verse 15, when they had assembled their brothers and consecrated themselves, they went in to purify the temple of Yahweh as the king had ordered, following the word of Yahweh. Chapter 30, verse 6, at the king's command, couriers went throughout Israel and Judah with letters from the king and from his officials, which read, people of Israel, return to Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, that he may return you who are left, who have escaped from the hands of the kings of Assyria. Verse 13, a very large crowd of people assembled in Jerusalem to celebrate the Feast of Unleavened Bread in the second month. 31, verse 1. When all this had ended, the Israelites who were there went out to the towns of Judah, smashed the sacred stones, and cut down the Asherah poles. They destroyed the high places and the altars throughout Judah and Benjamin and even in Ephraim and Manasseh. After they had destroyed all of them, the Israelites returned to their own towns, to their own property. And in verse 20, this is what Hezekiah did throughout Judah, doing what was good and right and faithful before Yahweh his God. In everything that he undertook in the service of God's temple and in obedience to the law and the commands, he sought his God and worked wholeheartedly, and so he prospered. So here you see great reforms put into place. Cleansing and taking care of all the problems that his father Ahaz had put into place there. Okay? How did God bless Hezekiah for his faithfulness? Chapter 32. After all that Hezekiah had so faithfully done, Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, came and invaded Judah. Okay? Now if you take a look at page 10, where is Hezekiah? Hezekiah is right there in he became king in 721 BC. When did the northern nation fall to Assyria? 722 BC, the year before. So Assyria is still a major power here. And who's next in line? Assyria now owns the northern nation of Israel, that area. It's also known as Samaria. Who's next in line? Judah. And so Sennacherib, who's the king at that time, sets his sights on Judah and comes and attacks. Doesn't sound like a great blessing, does it? Well, let's read further. He laid siege to the fortified cities, thinking to conquer them for himself. Verse 6, then Hezekiah appointed military officers over the people and assembled them before him in the square at the city gate and encouraged them with these words, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged because the king of Assyria and the vast army with him, because there's a greater power with us than with him. With him is only the arm of flesh, but with us is Yahweh our God to help us and to fight our battles. And the people gained confidence from what Hezekiah, the king of Judah, said. See his faith there? He's got this major threat. The Assyrians were the world power. They were dominating the world. They were building this empire, this world empire. They saw, the people of Judah saw what the Assyrians had done to Israel, and now they're threatening to do it to Judah. And Hezekiah says, don't worry, we got God on our side. God is much more powerful than these Assyrians. Verse 16, Sennacherib's officers spoke further against Yahweh God and against his servant Hezekiah. And then verse 20, King Hezekiah and the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amoz, cried out in prayer to heaven about this. And Yahweh sent an angel who annihilated all the fighting men and the leaders and officers in the camp of the Assyrian king. So he withdrew to his own land in disgrace. And when he went into the temple of his God, some of his sons cut him down with the sword. So God protected Judah. God protected Hezekiah because of his faithfulness. Okay? We have an angel that came and defeated the attacking Assyrians. And going on, verse 22, the Lord saved Hezekiah and the people of Jerusalem from the hand of Sennacherib, king of Assyria, and from the hand of all the others. He took care of them on every side, so he brought them peace. Many brought offerings to Jerusalem for Yahweh and valuable gifts for Hezekiah, king of Judah. From then on, he was highly regarded by all the nations. So God gave him wealth and success as well because of his faithfulness. All right? Another blessing, an interesting one, we see in 2 Kings chapter 20. We'll start with the first verse. In those days, Hezekiah became ill and was at the point of death. The prophet Isaiah, son of Amoz, went to him and said, this is what Yahweh says, put your house in order because you're going to die. You will not recover. Hezekiah turned his face to the wall and prayed to Yahweh, remember, O Yahweh, how I've walked before you faithfully and with wholehearted devotion and have done what's good in your eyes. And Hezekiah wept bitterly because he knew if this was God's plan, this was what was going to happen. But he turned to God and he prayed. And what's neat is verse 4, before Isaiah had left the middle court, the word of Yahweh came to him. He said, go back and tell Hezekiah, the leader of my people, that this is what Yahweh, the God of your father David, says. I've heard your prayer. I've seen your tears. I will heal you. On the third day from now, you'll go up to the temple of Yahweh, and I will add 15 years to your life. I will deliver you and this city from the hand of the king of Assyria. I'll defend this city for my sake and for the sake of my servant David. Okay? So God decided to allow him to live because he repented and he turned to God. When he was in need, he turned to God. Even though it was God's plan, he still turned to God. That's what God wants us to do, is he wants us to turn to him any time that we encounter something. Okay? Going on then, verse 8. Hezekiah had asked Isaiah, what will be the sign? How will I know that the Lord will heal me and that I'll go up to the temple on the Lord on the third day from now? Because I'm very sick, and how do I know I'm still even going to be around 3 days to be able to do this? Isaiah said, well, this is Yahweh's sign to you that Yahweh will do what he's promised. So you tell me, should the shadow go forward 10 steps or shall it go back 10 steps? It's a simple matter for the shadow to go forward 10 steps, said Hezekiah. That's the way the sun goes, right? Rather, have it go back 10 steps. Then the prophet Isaiah called upon the Lord, and the Lord made the shadow go back the 10 steps it had gone down on the stairway of Ahaz. So he gave him this great sign that he was going to heal him. The sun shadow went backwards for 10 steps as a sign. Okay, so Hezekiah was the best. Was he perfect? You know, we think of David as being the best, and he was. And they could look back to him. Was David perfect? No, he had that Bathsheba problem and some other problems too, right? Hezekiah had a problem. What was his biggest mistake? 2 Kings chapter 20, starting at verse 13. Hezekiah received messengers and showed them. Okay, well, let me back up. Verse 12. At that time, Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent Hezekiah letters and a gift because they had heard of Hezekiah's illness. So they were friends here, Okay? Hezekiah received the messengers and then showed them all that was in his storehouses, the silver, the gold, the spices and the fine oil, his armory, and everything found among his treasures. There was nothing in his palace or in all his kingdom that Hezekiah did not show them. Then Isaiah the prophet went to King Hezekiah and asked, "What do those men say, and where do they come from?" "From a distant land," Hezekiah replied. "They came from Babylon." The prophet asked, "What did they see in your palace?" "Oh, they saw everything in my palace," Hezekiah said. "There's nothing among my treasures that I didn't show them." Then Isaiah said to Hezekiah, "Hear the word of Yahweh. The time will surely come when everything in your palace and all that your fathers have stored up until this day will be carried off to Babylon. Nothing will be left, says Yahweh, and some of your own descendants, your own flesh and blood, that will be born to you will be taken away, and they will become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon." Here we get that pride thing again. Okay, just like Uzziah had that pride, now Hezekiah's got this pride, and he shows off his wealth to these Babylonians, and the judgment for that is that all of that wealth would eventually be taken to the Babylonians. Okay, but because of his faith, God didn't have that happen during Hezekiah's time. But Hezekiah knew it would happen to his descendants. Okay, now on Hezekiah, on the picture, we've got three volcanoes. Okay, those volcanoes remind us that Judah sought freedom from Assyrian bondage through alliances with Egypt and with Babylon during the time of Hezekiah. Okay, so we had three threats there, Assyria, Egypt, and Babylon during Hezekiah. But in all things, Hezekiah turned to God and was faithful to God. And then he was followed by his son Manasseh. So how faithful was Manasseh? 2 Chronicles chapter 33, and we won't read the 2 Kings 21 because it really says the same thing as 2 Chronicles, but I've given it to you so you can see it in both places. Chapter 33, Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 55 years, so quite a while. He did evil in the eyes of Yahweh, following the detestable practices of the nations that Yahweh had driven out before the Israelites. He rebuilt the high places that his father Hezekiah had demolished. He also erected altars to the Baals and made Asherah poles. He bowed down to all the starry hosts and worshiped them. He built altars in the temple of Yahweh, of which Yahweh had said, "My name will remain in Jerusalem forever." In both courts of the temple of Yahweh, he built altars to all the starry hosts. He even sacrificed his sons in the fire at the valley of Ben-Hinnom. He practiced sorcery, divination, and witchcraft, and he consulted mediums and spiritists. He did much evil in the eyes of the Lord, provoking him to anger. He took the carved image that he had made and put it in God's temple. Then verse 9, "But Manasseh led Judah and the people of Jerusalem astray, so that they did more evil than the nations that the Lord had destroyed before the Israelites." This is the worst. Manasseh was the worst. We had Ahab being the worst in the north, now Manasseh. He takes Ahab's and goes even worse. He worships every god but Yahweh. He sets up altars and temples and Asherah poles and all that to worship all the Baals and all the other gods of all the peoples around, and rejects Yahweh. He is the worst. He even sacrificed his sons in the fire there to these other gods. He reversed all the good that his father had done. He even desecrated the temple and put an Asherah pole in the temple, and so he was the worst. So how did God plan to punish Manasseh for this evil? 2 Kings 21, starting at verse 10. Yahweh said through his servants the prophets, "Manasseh, king of Judah, has committed these detestable sins. He's done more evil than the Amorites who preceded him and has led Judah into sin with his idols. Therefore, this is what Yahweh, the God of Israel, says. I'm going to bring such disaster on Jerusalem and Judah that the ears of everyone who hears of it will tingle. I will stretch out over Jerusalem the measuring line used against Samaria and the plumb line used against the house of Ahab. I will wipe out Jerusalem as one wipes out a dish, wiping it and turning it upside down. I will forsake the remnant of my inheritance and hand them over to their enemies. They'll be looted and plundered by all their foes because they've done evil in my eyes and have provoked me to anger from the day their forefathers came out of Egypt until this day. Moreover, Manasseh has also shed so much innocent blood that he has filled Jerusalem from end to end, besides the sin that he had caused Judah to commit. So they did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So God decided to wipe out, in punishment for Manasseh's sins and the sins of the people that followed Manasseh, God decided to wipe out Jerusalem and to hand Judah over to her enemies. Okay? Things were horrible during the time of Manasseh here. But then something happened, because we still have some more kings to talk about. And what happened? 2 Chronicles chapter 33, verse 10. Yahweh spoke to Manasseh and his people, but they paid no attention. So Yahweh brought against them the army commanders of the king of Assyria, who took Manasseh prisoner, put a hook in his nose, bound him with bronze shackles, and took him to Babylon. In his distress, he sought the favor of Yahweh his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers. Isn't that interesting? And when he prayed to Yahweh, Yahweh was moved by his entreaty and listened to his plea. And so he brought him back to Jerusalem and to his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that Yahweh is God. So Manasseh, the absolute worst king of Judah, who led Judah astray, led the people astray, worshipped all these horrible other gods, even sacrificed his own sons, when he was in prison in Assyria, he repented. He turned back to God. And what did God do? God said, "Oh no, your sins are much too great for me to ever forgive you." No. Look at the great sins that he did. And what did God do? He forgave him. He restored him. He brought him back and allowed him to become king again. Brought him back to Judah. For times when we think that our horrible sins are too great for God to forgive, look at Manasseh. Look how God forgave him when he repented. He simply repented and turned back to God, and God restored him. God forgave him. After he returned to Judah, what did he do? Verse 15. He got rid of the foreign gods and removed the image from the temple of Yahweh, as well as the altars he had built on the temple hill and in Jerusalem, and he threw them out of the city. Then he restored the altar of Yahweh and sacrificed fellowship offerings and thank offerings on it. And he told Judah to serve Yahweh, the God of Israel. The people, however, continued to sacrifice at the high places, but only to Yahweh their God. Okay? So he restored faithfulness to Yahweh. So even though most of his reign he was the worst, he then turned it around and became faithful and led Judah back into faithfulness. What a great story of forgiveness, of how people can turn, how people can repent and come back to a strong relationship with God. It happened to the worst king of Israel, Manasseh. Okay? Manasseh then, after he died, was followed by his son Amon. How faithful was Amon? Verse 21, Amon was 22 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 2 years. He did evil in the eyes of Yahweh, as his father Manasseh had done before. Amon worshipped and offered sacrifices to all the idols that Manasseh had made. But unlike his father Manasseh, he did not humble himself before Yahweh. So Amon increased his guilt. So he continued in the worst practices of his father, Manasseh. He was only around a couple of years. Why? What happened? Verse 24, Amon's officials conspired against him and assassinated him in his palace. Then the people of the land killed all who had plotted against King Amon, and they made Josiah, his son, king in his place. Okay? So he was assassinated by his officials. But unlike when we saw assassinations in the northern nation, what happened? Someone else, whoever led the assassination, got to become king. Well, here, though, they assassinated him, but his son then became king, his son Josiah. So let's talk about Josiah. Who was Josiah and how faithful was his reign? Josiah, well, he was the son of Ammon, we already saw. He was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 31 years. He did what was right in the eyes of Yahweh and walked in the ways of his father David, not turning aside to the right or to the left. So he did right in the ways of David. Okay, he followed the ways of David, didn't turn right or left, and was faithful. And so what do you see? You see then a bunch of reforms, because his father Ammon, even though Ammon had only been king for a couple of years, had reversed some of the reforms that Manasseh had done and returned things to the way things were under Manasseh. So what did he do? Verse 3, in the 8th year of his reign, while he was still young, so he started at 8, so this was 16 years old, right? He began to seek the God of his father David. In his 12th year, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem of high places, Asherah poles, carved idols, and cast images. Under his direction, the altars of the Baals were torn down. He cut to pieces the incense altars that were above them and smashed the Asherah poles, the idols, and the images. These he broke to pieces and scattered over the graves of those who had sacrificed to them. He burned the bones of the priests on the altars, and so he purged Judah and Jerusalem. Okay, so we see that we'll keep going. In the towns of Manasseh, Ephraim, and Simeon, as far as Naphtali, and in the ruins around them, he tore down the altars and the Asherah poles and crushed the idols to powder and cut to pieces all the incense altars throughout all of Israel. And then he went back to Jerusalem. So you see, he purged, he cleansed Judah, but not only Judah, but also Samaria. And take a look on page 10. Where is he? He is after the northern nation has gone. And so the peoples that are there, the peoples the Assyrians brought back in and settled there, but he goes through and smashes all the Baal altars and all the other altars and cleanses Judah and Samaria of the foreign gods in the high places. Okay, not only that, but also the Baal priests and Asherah poles and altars and mediums, all of that. We won't read the 1 Kings 23, but it just goes on and says even more about his reforms like that. Chapter 34, verse 8. In the 18th year of Josiah's reign, to purify the land and the temple, he sent Shaphan, the son of Azaliah, and Maaseiah, the ruler of the city, with Joah, son of Joahaz, the recorder, to repair the temple of Yahweh as God. Okay, and then you can read more as you keep reading on about that. But he repaired the temple. Okay, the temple was in disrepair from his father Ammon. And then verse 14. While they were bringing out the money that had been taken into the temple of the Lord, Hilkiah the priest found the book of the law of the Lord that had been given through Moses. When the king heard the words of the law, he tore his robes. And then verse 30. He went up to the temple of Yahweh with the men of Judah, the people of Jerusalem, the priests and the Levites, all the people from the least to the greatest. He read in their hearing all the words of the book of the covenant which had been found in the temple of the Lord. The king stood by his pillar and renewed the covenant in the presence of the Lord to follow Yahweh and to keep his commands, regulations, and decrees with all his heart and all his soul, and to obey the words of the covenant written in this book. Then he had everyone in Jerusalem and Benjamin pledge themselves to it. The people of Jerusalem did this in accordance with the covenant of God, the God of their fathers. So you see, they had lost the Bible. They had lost the Word of God. And when they were cleaning the temple, they found it. And nobody knew the law. Nobody knew God's Word. And so he had it read to the people. And he himself committed himself to follow God. And he had the people do that as well. So he found, read, and pledged the book of the law to all the people. In chapter 35, Josiah celebrated the Passover to the Lord in Jerusalem, and the Passover lamb was slaughtered on the 14th day of the first month. And then verse 18, The Passover had not been observed like this in Israel since the days of the prophet Samuel, and none of the kings of Israel had ever celebrated such a Passover as did Josiah with the priests, the Levites, and all of Judah and Israel who were there with the people of Jerusalem. So he celebrated the Passover in a grand way. Okay, got that started up again. All right, now he also fulfilled a key prophecy that we had from way, 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 way back in 1 Kings 13, 1-2. Take a look at 2 Kings 23, 15-16. See if you remember it. Even the altar at Bethel, the high place made by Jeroboam, son of Nebat, who had caused Israel to sin, even that altar and that place he demolished. He burned the high place and ground it to powder and also burned the Asherah pole. Then Josiah looked around, and when he saw the tombs that were there on the hillside, he had the bones removed from them and burned on the altar to defile it in accordance with the word of the Lord proclaimed by the man of God who foretold these things. Does that sound a little familiar? Look back at 1 Kings 13. We'll go ahead and read that. 1 Kings 13 verses 1 to 2 says, and this was when Jeroboam first set up this temple and first set up these gods. And by the word of the Lord, a man of God came from Judah to Bethel as Jeroboam was standing by the altar to make an offering. He cried out against the altar by the word of the Lord. Oh, altar, altar, this is what the Lord says. A son named Josiah will be born to the house of David. On you he will sacrifice the priests of the high places who now make offerings here, and human bones will be burned on you. Just what was foretold so many years before. When was that? Jeroboam, if you look on page 10, was back in the 931-930 BC time frame. We're now at Josiah, which is 638. 300 years later, that prophecy is fulfilled. And the guy was even named 300 years before. A guy named Josiah, who's going to be a descendant of David, would come and destroy this altar and burn the bones on this altar. Okay? And Josiah did that. Okay? Did Josiah's good turn God's wrath away from Judah? Because God had said under Manasseh that he was going to wipe Judah clean and he was going to punish Judah and allow Judah's enemies to come in. 2 Chronicles 34, starting at verse 25. I'll start actually at verse 23 because this prophetess comes up and she says, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Tell the man who sent you to me, this is what the Lord says. I'm going to bring disaster on this place and its people. All the curses written in the book that has been read in the presence of the king of Judah. Because they have forsaken me. They have burned incense to other gods and provoked me to anger by all that their hands have made. My anger will be poured out on this place. It will not be quenched. Tell the king of Judah who sent you to inquire of the Lord. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Because your heart was humbled, because your heart was responsive and you humbled yourself before God when you heard what he spoke against this place and its people, and because you humbled yourself before me and tore your robes and wept in my presence, I've heard you, declares the Lord. Now I will gather you to your fathers and you will be buried in peace. Your eyes will not see all the disaster that I'm going to bring on this place and all those who live here. Josiah's faithfulness and his reforms did not stop God's wrath. It postponed it though, okay? God decided that he wasn't going to bring his wrath until after Josiah, okay? But God is a just God, and this people have rejected him over and over again, and especially under the horrible, detestable practices that Manasseh put into place, God was going to destroy these people. All right, Josiah. We saw with Hezekiah, he had a big mistake. What was Josiah's biggest mistake? Chapter 35, starting in verse 20. After all this, when Josiah had set the temple in order, Necho, the king of Egypt, went up to fight at Carchemish on the Euphrates, and Josiah marched out to meet him in battle. But Necho sent messengers to him, saying, hey, what quarrel is there between you and me, O king of Judah? It's not you that I'm attacking at this time, but the house with which I'm at war. God has told me to hurry, so stop opposing God who is with me, or he will destroy you. Josiah, however, would not turn away from him, but disguised himself to engage him in battle. He would not listen to what Necho had said at God's command, but went to fight him on the plain of Megiddo. Archers shot King Josiah, and he told his officers, "Take me away, I'm badly wounded." So they took him out of his chariot, put him in the other chariot that he had, and brought him to Jerusalem, where he died. He was buried in the tombs of his fathers, and all of Judah and Jerusalem mourned for him. So here, he tried to pick a battle with the king of Egypt. The king of Egypt said, "Look, I've got no beef with you. I'm heading off to battle against other people that I'm supposed to go battle. So leave me alone. God's told me to go. So don't fight against me, because you'd be fighting against God." Well, he did. And as a result, he was killed in battle. Now, let's look at our picture. On our picture, we see a couple things on Josiah. Number one, we see a volcano there. And that volcano tells us that it was at this time that Assyria was defeated by Babylon. Babylon replaced Assyria as a world power. So now it's Babylon, where up until now Assyria has been the big major threat. Now Babylon is the big threat. Okay? We also see at this time Jeremiah pops up, and he speaks to Judah from the time of Josiah on through the end of the nation, on into exile. Okay? All right, after Josiah, we have Jehoahaz. And who was Jehoahaz? How faithful was his reign? Well, he was Josiah's son. And 2 Kings chapter 23, verses 30 to 32. Josiah's servants brought his body in a chariot from Megiddo to Jerusalem and buried him in his own tomb. And the people of the land took Jehoahaz, the son of Josiah, and anointed him and made him king in place of his father. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 3 months, only 3 months. His mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah. She was from Libna. Now, that's not the same Jeremiah that is the prophet here. Okay? He did evil in the eyes of Yahweh, just as his fathers had done. So now we have this great, faithful King Josiah, and his son takes over in a short period of time, turns away from God, and does evil in the eyes of the Lord. So what happens to him? Verse 33. Pharaoh Necho, okay, Pharaoh of Egypt, put him in chains at Riblah in the land of Hamath, so that he might not reign in Jerusalem, and he imposed on Judah a levy of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, the son of Josiah, king in place of his father Josiah, and changed Eliakim's name to Jehoiakim. But he took Jehoahaz and carried him off to Egypt, and there he died. So here we see Jehoahaz was deported to Egypt by Pharaoh Necho. Okay? So he only reigned for 3 months at the ripe age of 23 years old. But then we also see that Jehoiakim now is taking over, and Jehoiakim was really Eliakim. Okay, that was his name. We saw there in verse 34, we also see that in 2 Chronicles 36, verse 4. And he was Jehoahaz's brother, okay, also Josiah's son. And he took Eliakim, the name means God has established, and renamed him Jehoiakim, which means Yahweh has established. So Pharaoh here is appeasing the God of the Jews here by making this name change. And by making a name change, when whoever has the ability to change someone else's name is the one who's got power over that somebody. And so that's Pharaoh's also kind of pointing that out. So how faithful was Jehoiakim? Chapter 36 of 2 Chronicles, verse 5. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 11 years. He did evil in the eyes of Yahweh, his God. Okay? So he was evil in the eyes of the Lord, just as his fathers had been. Now we see on here, the picture here, two coins. Okay? One with an E on it and one with a B. The E coin reminds us that Judah became a vassal to Egypt, became subject to Egypt. We see that in 2 Kings 23, verse 35. Says, Jehoiakim paid Pharaoh Necho the silver and the gold that he demanded. In order to do so, he taxed the land and exacted the silver and gold from the people of the land according to their assessments. Okay? So, the Pharaoh put Eliakim, or Jehoiakim, in power as the king and said, if you want to be king, you got to pay me lots of money, and he did. And so they became the vassal, and Judah became subject to Egypt. Well, then we also have a B coin, and the point of that is that during Jehoiakim's reign, Egypt was defeated by Babylon at the Battle of Carchemish. And so now Judah became a vassal to Babylon. So what did Jehoiakim do after Egypt was defeated by Babylon? Chapter 24, 2 Kings. During Jehoiakim's reign, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, invaded the land, and Jehoiakim became his vassal for 3 years. But then he changed his mind, and he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. The Lord sent Babylonian, Aramean, Moabite, and Ammonite raiders against him. He sent them to destroy Judah in accordance with the word of Yahweh proclaimed through his servants, the prophets. Surely these things happened to Judah according to the Lord's command in order to remove them from his presence because of the sins of Manasseh and all that he had done, including the shedding of innocent blood. For he had filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, and the Lord did not forgive him. Okay? So, he accepted being a vassal to Babylon for 3 years, and then he rebelled, and God allowed all these raiders, all these people around him to beat up on Judah. And this was all part of God's plan to punish Judah for its faithlessness. Faithlessness that hit its peak under Manasseh, but faithlessness that now we're seeing under Jehoahaz and now under Jehoiakim. Now when Jehoiakim stopped paying tribute to Babylon, I wouldn't think Babylon would like that. And so what happened? 2 Chronicles 36, verse 6. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, attacked him and bound Jehoiakim with bronze shackles to take him to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar also took to Babylon articles from the temple of the Lord and put them in his temple there. So Jehoiakim was deported to Babylon by King Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, and he ceased being king. And then next we have Jehoiachin. So who was he, and how faithful was his reign? Verse 9. Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 3 months and 10 days. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So he was evil in the eyes of the Lord, just like his father had been, just like Jehoiakim had been. So, he only reigned for 3 months. Why? What happened to Jehoiachin? 2 Kings 24, verse 10. At that time, the officers of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, advanced on Jerusalem and laid siege to it. And Nebuchadnezzar himself came up to the city while his officers were besieging it. Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, his mother, his attendants, his nobles, and all his officials all surrendered to him. In the 8th year of the reign of the king of Babylon, he took Jehoiachin prisoner. As the Lord had declared, Nebuchadnezzar removed all the treasures from the temple of the Lord and from the royal palace and took away all the gold articles that Solomon, king of Israel, had made for the temple of the Lord. He carried into exile all Jerusalem, all the officers and fighting men, all the craftsmen and artisans, a total of 10,000. Only the poorest people of the land were left. Nebuchadnezzar took Jehoiachin captive to Babylon. He also took from Jerusalem to Babylon the king's mother, his wives, his officials, and the leading men of the land. The king of Babylon also deported to Babylon the entire force of 7,000 fighting men, strong and fit for war, and 1,000 craftsmen and artisans. Okay, so Jehoiachin surrendered to Nebuchadnezzar, so that's why he was king only 3 months. He was deported by Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon along with everybody who was worth anything, okay? All but the poorest of the land were taken to Babylon at this time, okay? So we see the battered sword on the Jehoiachin segment there, and that reminds us that Jehoiachin surrendered to Babylon and was taken there with all the important people. This was called the first exile, okay? Because we still see that there's still someone left. There's Zedekiah here, right? So this is the first exile. We'll see that there's a final captivity in a little bit here under Zedekiah. So let's look at who was Zedekiah, how faithful was he. 2 Chronicles chapter 36, verse 11. Zedekiah was 21 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 11 years. And by the way, he was the son of Josiah, okay, Jehoiachin's uncle. Going on, it says, he did evil in the eyes of the Lord his God and did not humble himself before Jeremiah the prophet who spoke the word of the Lord. So, he was evil like Jehoiakim was. All right, how did he get his name and become king? 2 Kings chapter 24, verse 17 says that Nebuchadnezzar made Mattaniah, who was Jehoiachin's uncle, the king in his place and changed his name to Zedekiah. Okay, so he was put in place by Nebuchadnezzar to be a puppet king to, okay, if you want to be king, then you're going to have to pay me tribute and you're going to do what I tell you. Just like Pharaoh Necho had done with Jehoiakim. And so now we have Mattaniah or Zedekiah being put in place and being renamed and being made king here. What was Zedekiah's biggest mistake? Verse 13 of 2 Chronicles 36. He also rebelled against King Nebuchadnezzar, who had made him take an oath in God's name. So he decided he didn't like to be under be subject to Babylon, so he rebelled. But Nebuchadnezzar had made him take an oath in the name of Yahweh. So he broke his oath to Yahweh. He became stiff-necked and hardened his heart and would not turn to Yahweh, the God of Israel. Furthermore, all the leaders of the priests and the people became more and more unfaithful, following all the detestable practices of the nations and defiling the temple of the Lord, which he had consecrated in Jerusalem. So Zedekiah rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar and rebelled against God because he rebelled against that oath that was made in God's name. So what happened? Well, look at God's patience here. Verse 15, the Lord, the God of their fathers, sent word to them through his messengers again and again because he had pity on his people and on his dwelling place. But they mocked God's messengers. They despised his words. They scoffed at his prophets until the wrath of the Lord was aroused against his people and there was no remedy. Okay, God in his patience kept calling to the people. God had this plan to where he was going to destroy this land, destroy this people. But in his great patience, he kept reaching out to them and they kept rejecting him. So what happened as a result? Verse 17. He brought up against them the king of the Babylonians who killed their young men with the sword in the sanctuary and spared neither young man nor young woman, old or aged. God handed all of them over to Nebuchadnezzar. He carried to Babylon all the articles from the temple of God, both large and small, and the treasures of the Lord's temple and the treasures of the king and his officials. They set fire to God's temple and broke down the wall of Jerusalem. They burned all the palaces and destroyed everything of value there. So, as a result of Zedekiah turning against Nebuchadnezzar, turning against Babylon, turning against God, God allowed Nebuchadnezzar to come in and besiege Jerusalem, to destroy Jerusalem, to tear down, to burn the temple, the palaces, to tear down the walls, to destroy Jerusalem, the place where God had his name. All the valuables were taken. Nothing was left. What happened to Zedekiah and the rest of Judah? Verse 20. He carried into exile to Babylon the remnant, everybody who was left. Remember, we had the first exile under Jehoiachin. Well, now Nebuchadnezzar gets all the rest of the people. And they became servants to him and his sons until the kingdom of Persia came into power. Okay, so we had all the people exiled. Now we have a little bit more of the story in 2 Kings chapter 25. Let's read some of that. Verse 6, we see that he was taken, this Zedekiah was taken to the king of Babylon at Riblah where sentence was pronounced on him. They killed the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. And then they put out his eyes, bound him with bronze shackles, and took him to Babylon. So the last thing that Zedekiah saw before he was blinded was his own sons killed. So he would have that vision haunting him for the rest of his life. Then he was taken in shackles to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar, the commander of the guard, carried into exile the people who remained in the city, along with the rest of the populace and those who had gone over to the king of Babylon. That's verse 11. Then verse 18. The commander of the guard took as prisoner Seraiah, the chief priest, Zephaniah, the priest next in rank, and the three doorkeepers. Of those still in the city, he took the officer in charge of the fighting men and five royal advisors. He also took the secretary, who was chief officer in charge of conscripting the people of the land, and 60 of his men who were found in the city. Nebuzaradan, the commander, took all of them and brought them to the king of Babylon at Riblah. There at Riblah in the land of Hamath, the king had those men executed. So Judah went into captivity away from her land. So what happened to the northern nation because of their rejection of God? We have something similar happening to the southern nation of Judah. It's not quite the same. It's not totally destroyed because the Babylonians took these people and brought them to Babylon and kept them together. There was Jewtown, okay, in Babylon. And we'll talk more about that later on. But what do we have here? We have what the Jews thought would never happen. God would never let anything bad happen to us. We'll touch on this a little bit in coming weeks. We're God's people. We've got God's name. We've got God's temple. He would never let anything bad happen to his temple. That's his house. He would never let anything bad happen to his name, happen to us, that we carry his name. Let anything happen to Jerusalem, the town where he put his name. But what did God do? He did. Out of his judgment against these people, he judged them and allowed them to be destroyed. So we see the deep red color under Zedekiah. Okay. And that reminds us that final captivity occurred in 586 when Zedekiah revolted against the Babylonians. These great hands that we see on both sides are crushing, looks like they're crushing the kingdom. And that reminds us that the southern kingdom was destroyed by the Babylonian hordes. Okay? Well, that's the story of the southern nation of Judah. Now let's do a real quick recap. Let's just look at the concepts of the picture. Okay? We start out at the very beginning with Rehoboam, and we've got a volcano there that reminds us that Egypt became a political threat to the south during Rehoboam. Remember, with Shishak coming in. Then we go to Jehoshaphat, a good king, and we see that the time of civil strife was ended. We see that peace flag. Okay, the civil war between the north and the south ended during Jehoshaphat, and that happened because of this wedding ring we see there. He had his son marry the daughter of the king of the north. That wedding ring's got a smudge on it because that was a horrible thing to do because the king of the north was Ahab, and that brought Baalism. That brought Baalism to the southern kingdom, which we see with the snake that's on the segments for Jehoram, Ahaziah, and Athaliah. So we have a time of Baalism during those reigns as a result of what Jehoshaphat did. The golden color of Uzziah, okay, reminds us that the period of wealth and prosperity in Judah reached its peak at that time. It was during that time that God also brought Isaiah and Micah, and they prophesied to Judah from Uzziah all the way to Hezekiah. The manuscript peg then we see on Ahaz, okay, Ahaz over on the left, shows us that Ahaz became an ally with Assyria to stop threats from Syria and all of Israel. Coins on Ahaz remind us that Ahaz allied with Assyria, that resulted in Judah becoming a vassal to Assyria or becoming subject to Assyria. Then you have Hezekiah. The three volcanoes on Hezekiah remind us about the three powers that popped up and that were threats during that time: Assyria, Egypt, and Babylon, all during the time of Hezekiah. The volcano on Josiah reminds us that it was during Josiah's time that Assyria was replaced as the world power by Babylon. Okay, Nineveh, the capital of Assyria, fell to Babylon, the capital of the Babylonians. On Josiah, we also have the banner of Jeremiah. So Jeremiah came and started speaking to Judah during the time of Josiah and was there for the rest of the existence of Judah and on into the exile. The E-coin that we see on Jehoiakim reminds us that Judah became a vassal to Egypt during Jehoiakim's reign. And then the other coin, the B, reminds us then that Egypt fell to Babylon, thereby making Judah a vassal or subject to Babylon at that time, also during Jehoiakim. Under Jehoiachin, we see the battered sword, and that reminds us of the first exile, that Jehoiachin surrendered to Babylon and was taken with all the important people in the first exile. And then the deep red color of Zedekiah reminds us then of the final captivity that occurred in 586 BC when Zedekiah revolted against the Babylonians and they came in and totally destroyed Jerusalem and took all the people to, all the remaining people to Babylon. The great hands crushing the kingdom, the southern kingdom was destroyed by the Babylonian hordes. That's what we remember there. Okay? Story of the southern nation. We see some times of faithfulness, some times of extreme unfaithfulness, and God's great patience over hundreds of years. Okay, this went from 931 BC to 561 BC, so you've got almost 400 years of existence of this nation and great patience on God's behalf. Let's close with prayer. God, we thank you for these stories. We thank you for the insights and the lessons that we can glean from those. The greatest lesson is just your great patience. As these people continue to reject you, you continue to reach out to them and be patient with them for so many years. And even when you were allowing them to be destroyed, you continued to reach out to them and gave them opportunity after opportunity. We look at the story of Manasseh and see how horrible he was. He was the worst in terms of worshiping other gods and leading people astray. And yet, when he repented, you forgave him. Even his great sins were not too great for your forgiveness. So that reminds us that the great sins that we have are not too great for you to forgive us. We thank and praise you for that. We praise you for your great patience, your great love, your great grace that you pour out on us through your Son, Jesus Christ. And in his name we pray. Amen.